Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another Talking Rugby Union podcast. My name's Joe Harvey. I'm joined by fellow TRU writer Chris Heal. Chris, how are things?
Good, Joe. Been a long time since we've done one of these, but I think this is the perfect time to be doing one.
Yeah, definitely. With Six Nations coming up, we're joined by the man that helped us preview the Autumn Nations Cup, which was, incidentally, the last podcast me and you did together, Chris. So
seamless, Joe.
Yeah, it's seamless. It's like, well, the thing is, if this is the only one we do before the Six Nations, this is the only one we do. It's a very consistent model that we're going with.
Yeah.
And that's the rest of that. But the man who is joining us is Charlie Beckett. Charlie, how are things?
Afternoon, gents. Yeah, I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I enjoy any chance to come on and just get really nosy and chat about rugby with you fine gentlemen. So I'm excited for that. It's good to be back. Thank you for having me back.
No, I'm really glad to have you. You've actually kind of gone past us now in podcast setups with your own podcast that's going on.
Mate, I've had, I think, what the kids call a glow up since we last spoke on my podcast. So last time I was just out of my laptop, and you'll see now I've got my mic, I've got my headphones, and no, I'm very fortunate that I got approached to start my own podcast. It's been in the works for probably just about 9 months now or so, but then I was all set to launch just before I got signed to back to Gloucester in the summer. Obviously put it on the back burner there with needs to put everything into the rugby, but it's something I really enjoy podcasting. I enjoy writing for you guys. I enjoy working in the media, and it was something that, yeah, 92 Degrees, the company, came to me and said, we'd be interested in you hosting a podcast that we sponsor. And I was like, look, lads, if you're going to give me coffee and let me talk, I'm happy with that. So they're two of my favourite things. So no, it's really good. It's exciting. But yeah, as I say, I've got a bit of kit now. So hopefully people listening to this will be able to hear my mutterings and rumblings a little bit clearer this time than last.
Yeah, and also, you're not in Tom Hudson's attic, I don't think, anymore.
No, I'm not. I was in Tom Hudson's spare room last time. No, I've, lads, I've got all grown up, and I've actually moved into a flat with my girlfriend. So that's all quite, yes, yeah, I know, all quite. But don't worry, there is still a tie to Gloucester Rugby. It is owned by Ed Slater and Fraser Balmain. So they are my landlords. They've gone from my teammates to my landlords. So if this Wi-Fi goes awry at any point, you know who to blame. That's Fraser Balmain and Ed Slater. Any issues, please send them their way.
Well, we all know Ed Slater will just slam me in some description anyway when he gets the opportunity.
Still on that, mate. Last season's press launch at Gloucester. Mate, Ed Slater commented on your shoes.
I've got the shoes somewhere. I've actually wrecked them in the snow.
That was a good call, seeing the state of them before they were in the snow. I would have read
good
them
Good shout,
earlier.
Charlie. Good shout.
I don't know if I want to do this podcast anymore. but obviously we're here to talk Six Nations, but first things first. Charlie, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, because once, you know, we're in lockdown again, so I can't really remember time. Time isn't really a thing anymore again. But what I do know is that, yeah, exactly. And, I mean, as we know from watching the Marvel Universe over the years, it's not real. It's not a thing. It doesn't exist. And you had a column out the other week, which was talking about the hashtag I care movement, which was, you know, it's obviously because of some comments that were made about women's sport, which have kind of, it keeps on periodically happening, unfortunately, every couple of months, really, at the moment. And the feedback you got from that was brilliant.
Yeah, mate, it was all a bit bonkers, wasn't it, really? Like, obviously, there was the awful comments about the Women's Six Nations being postponed on the Sky Sports post, and the overriding theme was "Who cares?" Which then Steph Evans of Bristol Bears picked up with Ruggette RFC, her company. They picked up the brilliant "I Care" campaign, and it was so great. Over that week, I was seeing loads of people from men's and women's rugby and outside of rugby, just fans explaining why they cared with the hashtag "I care" hashtag. And about, I said in my article, about three or four times, I started typing a tweet to explain why I cared. And I was like, I can't really do it just through a tweet or an Instagram caption, which then suddenly it hit me. I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner. You guys very kindly afford me the platform of my column to chat about things in rugby when I fancy that are important to me. And I thought, well, that's the perfect place to do it. And I actually, I wrote it sat in a Northampton service station on my way to training at Amptill. I stopped to have my food and I wrote it there. And once I got going, it just all came out really. I didn't really know what I was going to say before I started typing. I thought, I just normally have a bit of a plan with them, what I want to say. But I was like, this one, I think I just need to get typing and see what comes out. And they didn't really stop. And it was all very much from the heart. Like, I'm very fortunate that I said in the article, I've been had first-hand experience of women's rugby since a young age through Waterloo, my club at home, to Jill Burns' clubs. I've always grown up. It's always been a women's team. So I've always grown up. So women playing rugby has been the norm for me my whole life. Then obviously Sarah, my sister Sarah, plays for England. So she's played since she was 6 or 7. So I've watched her. So I've never really thought women shouldn't play rugby, or it's odd that even that women play rugby, because it's just been a part of my life forever. And my mum and grandma, while they haven't played, were hugely involved with the rugby club. So it's just been the norm. So I just wanted to get across why I cared. What I didn't expect was for it to go the way it did. Like, people seemed to really relate to it, which was really nice. Quite hyper, likes of Claire Balding and Judy Murray were tweeting it, and it seemed to transcend sports. Like, I had people reaching out to me from cricket, from hockey, from all sorts of walks of life in sports with their experiences of women's sport and the challenges they've faced. And I had a lot of also players I play with, have played with or played against, reach out to me privately saying they didn't actually realise the abuse that is out there for women's sport and hers, because if they don't care, which is fine, they just scroll past, which is absolutely fine. I said in my article, not everyone has to care. Not everyone is going to care about everything. You can't. But it's the going out of your way to say negative things that I don't understand. A lot of people I've played with, a lot of the lads I play with, aren't huge fans of women's rugby, and that's fine. They don't have to be. So they hadn't seen it. Actually, they read my article and then they went and found the comments of the post. They're like, I cannot believe this is happening. So hopefully it helped raise the awareness of what's out there and the struggles female athletes face day to day and what they have to go through. And they are, I describe them as rock stars, and they are. The things they do just to be able to play at the top end of the sport is unbelievable. It challenges we men, because we're fortunate that we are a more professional setup at this moment in time. We don't have to face, we can't understand. So it was nice to see it have some sort of effect. I was just chatting to you boys off air about, I've got a nice follow-up piece planned where I'm going to sit down with Steph this weekend, hopefully, and type up and sit down with her, and how I want to chat about how we can all help the movement going forward, what the next steps are. So hopefully that'll be just as interesting, a good read. And really, I just want more people to see what the challenges these women face, why we need to help them, because they do face some of the challenges just because they're women, and that's nonsense. Face it because you're a woman, that's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately something that's come up again recently with Emma Hayes and her link to the AFC Wimbledon job as well. And if you can, actually, there's a brilliant video of Emma talking to the press. I think it was today or it was yesterday or something like that. And she discusses not only is it a thing about women, it's things to do with different races and, you know, kind of their involvement in football and sport as a whole, actually. And it is been a very important topic as ever to talk about. And it all stemmed from the postponement of the Women's Six Nations to, apparently, the day we're recording this, apparently, is the day the announcement is going to be made about when that competition is going to take place, which is very much sod's law. Chris, you spoke to Rachel Burford, who Charlie also spoke to for his first episode of Brew with Beckett. What was Rachel's thoughts and feelings about the postponement of the Women's Six Nations?
Yeah, just before we get onto that, Joe, I just want to go back to Charlie's columns, and he said, oh, a lot of people resonate with them. And that's what I've noticed with when reading, me and you obviously read Charlie's columns and have a look at them before we go out, and 9 times out of 10, we don't have to change them because of the quality that Charlie puts his views across. But that's the feeling that I get with Charlie's recent columns, that's resonating with a lot of people. And yes, we're focusing on women's rugby here, but it's about inclusivity and tackling stigmas. And I know I use tackling stigmas a lot because I do a bit of work for Looseheads, but we had Craig Maxwell Keys on the podcast the other week, and he was saying, well, you know, we want to be diverse, we want to keep inclusivity up. I'm not going to shut up about it. If people don't like it, I'm going to keep talking about it. And the fact that Charlie's done one column and he's going to go, oh, I'm going to do something with Steph, I think it unfortunately needs to keep happening, because as you quite rightly say, Joe, we've seen the stuff of Emma Hayes today, and it's like, well, again, these comments are repeating and repeating and repeating themselves, and we need to keep not shutting up about it. And I think what I've learned on TRU is our coverage of women's rugby, with obviously the help of Charlie, is continued, and hopefully by discussing it more and not shutting up and letting these people have a voice, we can continue to make positive strides forward. So, but onto your actual question, Joe, about Rachel Burford, she's great value, and Charlie will know that from the podcast he's just recorded with her and published. And she basically just said what a lot of people have said, that yes, it was disappointing, but there's a brilliant opportunity here for women's rugby. There's a lot of mirroring that's got on with games being played at the same time as the men's, and kickoff times being very unsociable at half-hour kickoff times. Correct me if I'm wrong, Charlie, for some of these women's games. And it's like, people aren't even finishing work then. People might not even be walking through a door, and you it's England versus France in the sixth or whatever it might be. And I think, you know, the frustration, which Berth said, was that there had been no clarity. It was like, we're going to postpone it, and there's not really going to be a date. And as you say there, Joe, hopefully we'll get the date today for when it's going to take place. But what she has been positive to hear is that the organisers are discussing that this isn't a new conversation that's just been happened because of COVID. It has been in the pipeline, but maybe the silver lining of COVID will give the women's game an opportunity to really shine, because it absolutely deserves to. And if there's a year that the women's game needs to shine even more so, it's 2021. You know, we've got the World Cup, fingers crossed, in September, which is going to be fantastic. And if the Six Nations can be on in April, May time, what an appetizer that's going to be for such a big year for women's sports. So Burford was obviously very positive about it. Amber Reid was the same when I had a little chat with her as well. So I think the overriding view, and Charlie will know probably better than I do, that there is this opportunity that hopefully women's rugby and the organisers of the Six Nations can see, which can only do positive things.
Yeah, I think you're very right, because I think the frustration from speaking to a few of the girls I know and then being a fan of it was that it was, we're postponing it, and there was no, but this is our plan. There was murmurs what the plan was. I think they should have been better at, we're postponing it, but actually we've got a plan in place and here it is. So it didn't feel like an afterthought. But I, especially after speaking to Rachel, it got me excited about the thought of, I do think having it separate would be a good idea. I think you get more people watching, because you think at the moment, the under-20s, the women's and the men's all go on the same weekend. Now, rugby fans, if you're a rugby fan, will want to watch them all, but you just can't. There's you have a life to live. And like I said about the unsociable times, well, the women's are normally going on at either midday, which actually people are still doing their morning stuff. People are getting their stuff done before the rugby, and the set inverted commas, before the what's viewed as the main event, which is the men. So people are still, they're too busy to do it then. Or like you say, 5, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening, when actually people then are having their dinner at the weekend, or they're actually setting down, like sport, you watch your sport at in the middle of a Saturday or middle of a Sunday. That's kind of when you go, right, I'm going to sit down and watch a sport. And as a rugby fan, that's when the men's rugby's on at the moment. Or let's be honest, unless you have a vested interest in the women's game, 99% of rugby fans, if they're off a men's game or a women's game, at this moment in time, are going to choose a men's, because it's higher profile, they know the players, it's what they're used to. So I think we've got to give them the women's rugby is on now, and there's no rugby against it. So if you want to watch some rugby, it's there for you now, and go and watch it because it's great. And actually then you'll start to build a fan base when it's not in competition with itself almost in another game of rugby. So I think it's been forced by COVID, as you said. But I think it's a really exciting opportunity. I want to see 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon, England versus France women on BBC One, on ITV One, on the main channels, with the same production value and the same everything that the men's game has in the Six Nations we're going to watch now, and give it its first time of a fair crack and just see the viewer numbers and see the interest, because I genuinely think with a fair crack like that, they'll be through the roof.
I think we saw that, didn't we, probably, Charlie, in the autumn. I know the games were, as you quite rightly said, midday, but the viewing figures from both of those games that England played against France were astounding. And if that's a taste of what's to come, I think you're absolutely right with what you say.
No, definitely. And it's something that's going to be obviously carried on to be covered by Talking Rugby Union all the way throughout this year and beyond. But I suppose we might as well get to the topic of conversation for today, which is everything that's kicking off Saturday, isn't it? There's no Friday game this year, so it's kind of straight into the weekend. We're starting off, well, we'll just review every team, but we'll start off with England, because I think that's a friendly, easy one for us all to kind of go with. England's first squad is going to be announced tomorrow from the day of recording, so the day that the podcast is going to be released. There's not really loads to say about this England squad. I think the key things are Apalo Adogwu and Tom West and Harry Randall. They've all been called up for the first time. Joe Marler, he's not going to be in the squad because he's decided not to go because of the COVID kind of implications that come with the extended travel times. Joe Launchbury's injured. Sam Underhill is injured, which means that Charlie Ewells and Jack Willis will replace them. Courtney Laws is back, and Jonathan Joseph is omitted from the squad entirely. He's part of the shadow squad, which means he could get called up because he's on the same testing schedule. Who should we go with first? We'll go with Charlie. What are your thoughts about this England team?
Well, first of all there, Joe, when you were saying about Joe Launch being injured, so it meant that Charlie, for a second I thought you were about to tell me I've been called up to England and this was how Eddie had decided to tell me.
Is this an exclusive now?
I was like, wow, well, I need to get down to Pennyhill, don't I? But no, I obviously have personal relations to it to Paolo and Harry. Harry Randall played with them both in Boston Academy with Harry, Leicester with Paolo. Replays both, probably stayed close to Paolo, and I've seen Paolo's jam. I'm so excited for him, so happy for him. The way he's been playing this season has just been phenomenal. And last time I was on, we spoke about Eddie picking on form with certain players. I'm going to say what I said last time. Sam Simmons, I don't know what you have to do. But aside from that, and Ben Spencer, but aside from that, to see him, see Paolo play so well consistently, and Eddie go, yeah, I'm going to give him a go. I just really hope he's in the 23 for the weekend. I'd be desperate to see him play. And the same with Rans, actually. But no, I think it's, again, you see the embarrassment of riches that England have at their disposal, especially in the back five of the scrum, when you look at the players who were injured and then you look at the players who aren't even making the shadow squad. And actually, it's just incredible. So I think England or France will be able to, sure, we'll get into France, will be my favourites going into it. But it's going to be, I think it's a very good tournament. But yeah, that England squad, there's been, like you say, there's some big names have been omitted, but if you're picking on form, there's not too many I think you'd have differently.
Definitely. And obviously, one of your former coaches, he's involved with the team now, Ed Robinson. Yes. He got called up because Jason Ryles, he didn't want to travel from Australia. Again, same as Joe Marley, extended travel time. What's Ed like as a character? What does he kind of offer around the camp?
Oh, mate, if you think I love rugby, you haven't spoken to Ed Robinson. Oh, you've never met someone who loves rugby more. Obviously, huge rugby family. You can tell that they've just talked about rugby their whole lives. But no, he's a great guy, mate. He very much changed the style of play we had at Jersey. He wants to play the beautiful game. He wants to play attractive rugby. Sometimes it's quite frustrating being coached by him because you're like, Ed, it doesn't work like that on a pitch. Like, you'll carry the halfway and he'd be like, okay, you've made 2 or 3 metres. Why haven't you scored? I'm like, well, I'm carrying from the halfway, Ed. He's like, but no, go and score the try. That's what he's like, go and score, go and finish, go and do it. And he very much wants to empower players to go and do that. So honestly, when I saw that news, obviously I was shocked because it came out of nowhere, but really excited for him, really pleased for him. And hopefully he will have a really good experience there and leave his mark. But no, he'll want the game to be played in an attractive manner. He likes the beautiful game, which is, as a fan, that's what you want to see, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, especially after the way the autumn went. Chris, something that came out yesterday, so Tuesday, was that John Mitchell had signed a new 2.5-year contract, which will keep him with England until the closing of the 2023 World Cup. How important do you think he is to the squad and what Eddie Jones wants to do as a team? Because it seems like as soon as he came in, there was this massive kind of shift in the intensity of the defence in particular.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Joe. I think what we did see, as you said there before, that, you know, the autumn might have been a bit drab for some, but what we did see is how England were in defence. And it's quite clear that the impact that he's had on the team. And Eddie is using him as, I think the Telegraph wrote something today saying that he's Eddie's lieutenant, isn't he? And England have really, really based their game on that. And I think what we have seen is not only has the team evolved, I think he might have evolved as a coach as a bit. And I think some of those players themselves in the England team, yes, they're going to develop in the Premiership environments with the coaches. But if you look at probably England's back row as well, I might be wrong if I say this, but they were not as influential as they were 4 or 5 years ago before John. I think Mitchell came, was it 2017, 2018? And I think what he's done, not only with the team defensively, but also with individual players, is making England tick and into this machine that, yes, they might not play pretty rugby, but they all do the basics right. I think it's massive for Eddie to have that. And when we talk about Ed coming in and a bit of a, you know, difficulties with the coaches because of COVID, to have someone like John Mitchell there that Eddie can bounce ideas off, I think is only going to go one way, and it's going to be positive for England. And I don't think England have had any sort of backward steps with him in charge of that aspect of the game. So yeah, really pleasing that he signed on again. And I think Eddie will be delighted as well that everything will be building towards 2023 with Mitchell at his side.
What do you think, lads? How do you think England will be affected by the fact, obviously, there's a core of Saracens players there who haven't played since the Autumn Cup? What do you think? Do you think that's going to affect them hugely? Like, you look at the spine of the team is Saracens, really, if we're being honest. You've got your, obviously, hooker, line-out, main line-out jumper, caller, if Launchbury's not there, probably Itoje become the line-outs. Billy at 8, I know he played against Ealing the other week, but he's had one hit out since the Autumn. And then Farrell, amongst others, like, there's some big players in this team that haven't played any proper competitive rugby for 3-4 months now. Do you think that's going to have an effect?
Well, it's a funny one. So I was on one of the England calls last week. Can't remember which one it was. And Jamie George was up for talking about it. And obviously, he's one of those players that he hasn't played since the 66th minute or something like that against France in that game. And he just talked about they were just on a S&C program to get ready for test match rugby. So they basically lessened the load in terms of a week to week. But they've probably been doing more loading in order to get ready for the games. They've just been conditioning themselves to play test match rugby, which they wouldn't ordinarily get the opportunity to do. So I think they're actually going to come into it. I think we're going to see them really fit and really quite keen, because they wouldn't usually get the opportunity to not train at all in some weeks with Saracens, is certainly my opinion of it. And I think we're hopefully going to see Owen Farrell look a bit refreshed, because he's played so much rugby in the last 10 years. So I think he's actually going to be I'm quite excited about it, because Billy, I think Jamie made the joke that he's not one for running up and down the field. He just wants to play rugby. So, I mean, personally, I'm quite excited to see what Saracens boys do, because they're just going to have all this pent up energy, I think.
I think Joe's absolutely right there, but maybe two things which I think will maybe spur the Saracens lads on. I think one's the winning mentality. I think it's been ingrained in them, and they will come into big pressure games knowing, yeah, we know what to do. We've been here before. We've done it at club level. We've done it internationally. No reason why we can do it again after a long layoff. And I think the second thing is that carrot of the Lions tour. I think you got players in their own rights, as you listed them off there, Charlie, I told you, Farrell, George, whatever, they should be going anyway to South Africa or Australia or the British Isles, wherever the Lions tour might be. But that should be their carrot anyway, because you will have players like Luke Cowan-Dickie banging at the door going, you know, I've been playing for a double winning team last year and I've been playing consistent rugby. Why am I not getting ahead of Jamie George? And maybe that sort of pressure in the squad will push these guys onto the next level. And people will be right. I think you're right, Charlie. People will be cautioned to see, well, these lads haven't played again rugby. What can we expect against Finn Russell or Stuart Hawker, who have been playing consistently at club level? But I think the flip side is these guys know how to win, and they have the chance to have a big, big year again with the Lions. So their mentality is going to be huge, and I think that will come to the fore, hopefully, from an England perspective on Saturday evening.
And just kind of to wrap this up, it's going to be good, because Ben Obano looks like he's actually going to get a cap after, I think, 3 or 4 years of kind of sat there in the wider training squads. Who else? Charlie Yule is probably going to gain a bit more experience. I think the main thing is just seeing what Eddie Jones does in regards to his back row, because Courtney Laws or Maratoji can play there. And with Sam Underhill injured, I think probably one of the most natural decisions is to shift Tom Curry to the open side and then put Billy at 8. And then have just a big hitter at 6. Don't know about anyone else, but England's still kind of overwhelming favourites for me to win a fourth Six Nations in 6 years.
On that back row, Joe, I'd really like to see Jack Willis play.
Yeah.
I know he got called up because of the injury. I'd really like to see him play. I think I know it's another jackler in the back row, but they normally play with Curry and Underhill. So I think that would disrupt the England game plan less, looking from the outside in, of that's what they're used to in the back row. But I think he's phenomenal. I just think he's exceptional. I think the way, especially, he ended last season, since basically how he's played since the first lockdown, and the fact I'm saying the first lockdown is incredible. That's a different conversation. But since rugby restarted at the end of last summer in August, he's been, for me, the form back row in England. So I'd really like to see him get a crack on Saturday. But to answer your actual question, again, I've done that. You didn't ask that question, but I've jumped in. I think England would be the favourite to me as well. And I'm going to say the most cliche rugby saying in the history of the world. We all know what it is. Across the whole Six Nations, it depends what France turns up.
Yeah, definitely does.
Because I think on their day, they'll beat anyone comfortably. I think they're so much fun to watch. They are, in inverted commas, a proper French team at the moment, aren't they?
Yes.
They really are.
Yeah. And speaking of the old UA, I think the big thing for France at the moment is that they're going to be missing Rimi Vakatawa and Romain Ntamack, as they're both injured. Vakatawa with a knee injury, and I think Ntamack is just a reoccurrence of the injury that kept him out of the autumn, which is obviously a massive shame. Chris, you know Sean Edwards,
text conversations.
Yeah, exactly.
I will read you all the text he sent me the other week, because I wanted to try and do an interview with him again. And we did one. He said, "Oh, thanks for your time, Sean." He just said, "Mercy. Mercy, mate." But no, he said, yeah. Sorry, go on, Joe.
No, I was going to say, we obviously saw from France last year this kind of I don't know how to describe it, kind of rejuvenated defence that we hadn't actually ever really seen before in the last, I mean, probably since they last won the Six Nations in 2010, where we actually got to see a French defensive front that, aside from one or two mishaps in terms of punching Jamie Ritchie, for example, aside from that one incident, France looked hugely impressive in defence. And obviously, Sean has to take pretty much all the plaudits for that, surely.
Yeah, I was on the Six Nations launch last week and got to the French section, and Fabien Galthié was there and sort of asked him a question about sort of where France were at. And he kept using this phrase, the project, the project, the project. So I just asked him about the influence Sean had, and he was like, well, yeah, Sean's a massive part of the project. And you can see kind of the influence he's had. I mean, as you say, Joe, straight away, sort of in the Six Nations last year, he's a man that doesn't look like you want to mess with him. But what I think he has done, which everyone will talk about, yeah, look at the great defence, but he's embraced the French lifestyle. You know, he lives over there now. He does all his coaching sessions in French, all the analysis meetings in French, the best he can. He's settled over there. And what he said, actually, in his own words, was you do get coaches who will go over to a foreign country and not kind of embrace it and kind of maybe step away and do the bare minimum. He's just kind of gone, well, if I'm going to make this work, I'm going to make this opportunity work, I've got to throw myself into it. And that is clearly rubbed off on the team. But as a player, obviously, I don't know, having played 1.5 games at Wilmslow High School, but as a player, if someone knows your culture and gets what you are as a person and you are as a team, I think as players, you're going to automatically respond to that because they would have been used to French coaches, the French style. And if Sean comes in, a lad from Wigan comes in to try and sort your defence out and actually understands you as players and has that personal relationship, I think is massive for France. And it's absolutely helping. I think Galthié gets it as well. And we're seeing now these young players getting a chance and thriving. I know you probably couldn't come on to people like Jolly Bear as well, Joe, but these lads are getting a chance. They look like they're enjoying the rugby playing for France. And as Charlie said, they do look a bit changed. And if they do sort out that discipline and, you know, don't press the red button when something happens and they go and lash an elbow in someone's face, they can really challenge England. And I don't think England are overwhelming favourites because of the quality and the depth France were able to show in the autumn as well.
And kind of speaking of that Autumn Nations Cup final, and this kind of relates into this point, they've got 5 uncapped players in that squad from what I could work out from the press release, which was just a picture of the squad, which wasn't great. And, you know, if we look at the halfbacks, for example, Mathieu Jalibert and Louis Carbonell, between them have got 10 caps, which when you think that's your two 10s that you can rely on for the entirety of a Six Nations tournament, there's not much experience there before. But however, the real kind of thing that kind of sticks in your mind is that they didn't have many caps at all in that entire squad that took England into extra time. Charlie, when you were watching that, what was going through your head as someone who's probably, you know, played against some of these lads when they were kind of age grade and you were in England under 20s?
My first worry was that someone had held a gun to Owen Farrell's head and told him he had to start missing kicks. I was worried about that for a second. But no, it was great to see, like you say, a lot of those lads are names I recognise of playing at 18s, 20s, playing against them. Dupont has made me look like a mug many occasions in England and France. And you say about the two tens being so young and lack of experience, I think even though Dupont is my age, I actually think he's younger. I think he's 23, 24. I think he's a year younger than me. Actually, he's incredibly experienced. Now, look how long he's been playing for Toulouse and how many caps he's got. So having him inside them, he is the petit général, isn't he? He just runs their game. That will really make it easier for those tens. But no, it's nice for me, having been a young player frustrated at times, to see them put faith in if you're good enough, you're old enough. It was just nice to see them do that. And actually, yeah, obviously I wanted England to win that Nations Cup. I'm English. Obviously I wanted that. But once they'd won and I could look back on the game, it was nice to see a young side who no one expects anything of, never expected them to be rolled over, go out there and do a job. It was part of, we didn't win, but that Gloucester team that I was in that went down to Exeter, we played their team that started the European final bar one because of the way they were rotating their strongest team, the second team, and we were rotating the other way. So I was in our second team, we went down and played them and we pushed them close. And it's such a great feeling to be in a side like that. And it's nice to see young players go and have the attitude of, we've got them to lose, we're going to throw a course to the wind, we're going to play our rugby, we're going to see what sticks. And they were that close, weren't they, to beating England in that final. So obviously, massively pleased England won. But it was nice to see a young side do well against the odds.
No, definitely was. Obviously, last year, we only really got to see a snapshot of the full capability of this team because of their selection issues, which was that, you know, you can only select certain players for three games and they had to go back to their clubs. Such was the agreement between LNR and FFR. But yeah, I thought I stumbled on that, but I didn't. So do we all feel that this is the opportunity for Galtier to choose who are his kind of key men, injury permitting, that are going to take him forward to the World Cup? Because it seems like 2 and a bit years away, that doesn't seem like it's that far at all to a World Cup in your home country, in your own backyard. We'll start with Charlie.
Yeah, I think he has to now. I think, as Chris said, he was talking about the project. I think your project has to be World Cup to World Cup, doesn't it? You say they lost 12 months effectively of what they would have planned to be doing, you'd imagine, with COVID and those agreements you were talking about, etc. So I think you've got to now start thinking, okay, I need to start putting my partnerships together here and have the long view of who's going to be my team to go and try and win a World Cup at home. And if they get it right, and Chris talked about, they seem a different side at the moment, they get that discipline right, if Sean can get them as excited about defence as they are in attack, which it seems like he is, they're going to be a real player at that World Cup. They're a strong side. I think they might be getting the timing right of those players now. You blood them now, 2 years experience at Test Rugby, you're a completely different animal. So I think you've got to start looking now at, okay, who are the ones I think are going to take me forward to the next World Cup and who are the ones who maybe aren't, and starting to sort them from each other, I think, now.
Chris, much the same thoughts there?
Yeah, I think so. I think the time's now. I think we will go on to Wales and we will go on to Ireland, but Galtier comes in a similar kind of vein, doesn't he? France, new start. Ireland, new star, Wales, new star. And he's used 2020 as a really good opportunity to get some of these young lads in. And the Autumn Nations Cup was probably, that was what it was there to do, really. I know England had a different approach to get results. And we as England fans, you know, if you look back on it, brilliant, two trophies last year. But I think France did have to, in a little bit of a way, were forced to use some of the other players because of the rule in the top 14. But they've used it well. I think they used last year extremely well. They would be disappointed not to have got over the line and won the Six Nations at the first time masking. But as Charlie said, this is now all building towards the World Cup to World Cup. And a Six Nations is a big, big opportunity to put a marker down. And if France do and go with it, then it's like everyone stands up and takes notice of them a little bit more. I know there's a lot of excitement around it at the moment, but if you're an Australia, New Zealand fan, you're looking at the Six Nations and go, oh, England won again. That's who we have to be worried about. And I think if France do put in a performance against England at Twickenham, whatever it is, next month, and do go and win the Six Nations, everyone just stands up and takes notice of the host nation and go, hang on a minute, they mean business again. And that's what they need to do, because yes, we're excited by them, but can they go and deliver now? And I think that will definitely just hold them in good stead and get that winning habit going towards the autumns, towards the next couple of Six Nations, and obviously building towards their own World Cup in 2 years' time.
Also, I think you said earlier, Joe, the last Six Nations they won was 2010, I think you said. France is a proud rugby nation. Like rugby, you only have to look at the crowds they get in Pro D2 and even National League when they have crowds, so you see what rugby means to them. They will be hurting at that, and the French public will be looking at this team going, we need to win something here. And I think there will be pressure on for the public that this is a year they can win. Whether it maybe comes a season or two too early for them to be real contenders this year, you don't know, but they will be smarting at the fact they haven't won one for 11 years. That's honestly, I didn't realise it was that long since you said it then. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it certainly is. And we'll move on now to Ireland. The real big note I've put here is that Paul O'Connell's joined them as a forwards coach. That's pretty big.
Yeah, so, you'd like to hope their line-out will be really good now, because he was really good at line-outs. He was good. No, I think kind of flat, like I came with this excited to talk about England, France, and then Wales, everything that's going on there. So actually, Ireland are kind of just, I don't mean this in disrespect at all, but kind of just there, aren't they? But actually, they're kind of just there, but they're always really hard to beat. They're always a good side. They've got some incredibly talented players, and on their day, could definitely beat anyone. So I think they're probably flying under the radar a little bit, which I'm not sure they'll mind. You don't mind that at all. You go about your business, and then you turn up and you surprise people. So it'll be interesting to see how they go. I think I don't expect them to win it, but I think they'll be a tough team to beat, like they always are.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the big lines I've written down here is that Tag Furlong's back. That's quite an important thing. You know, tight head, you know, great hands, this, that, and the other. They're missing Quinn Roo and Kalen Dorris. They're the real big misses for this round in particular. Jacob Stockdale's actually injured as well, which means that fullback is that kind of race is completely blown open again. Do we feel like, Chris, they're going to rely on Connor Murray and Johnny Sexton too much again to kind of be the players they were maybe 2-3 years ago and not necessarily the players they are now?
That's the worry, isn't it? That's the worry if you're an Ireland fan. I think what they've got to get away from is the Joe Smith era. That's something they need to get away from. Yes, they made great steps forward, you know, Grand Slams, and, you know, he had a massive impact on Irish rugby. But what I think Andy Farrell started to kind of do is just put his imprint on it. And this is now an opportunity. I said an opportunity for France to go on and make a statement. I think in a way for Ireland as well, that Andy Farrell's, this is my team now. And yes, Sexton and Murray do play a big part, but there might be games where Johnny Sexton's injured. I know he's carrying an injury he's had last week. He's hoping to be fit for the majority of the Six Nations as well. And hopefully that doesn't rear its head again. But they might be without them, and Farrell has to find a way of coping without them. And I think he will. They've got some great players coming through. I mean, you know, being a rugby nerd that I've started to become recently, I managed to watch some of the highlight. I think it was on a Friday or a Saturday afternoon, the Ulster A game against Leinster A, I think they played the other week.
Wow. And some of the... Hang on, Chris.
That is keen.
That's deep into rugby. If you're watching the A game,
it was the highlights on the BBC, and I was like, I'll give it a watch, just have a look. But some of the young players, they had looked pretty decent. That, I've been slated now for doing a bit of research for a podcast that I knew was coming 3 weeks ago.
So will you stop being such a good professional, Chris Hill? It's making the rest of us all look bad.
I'm far from a professional.
I only watched one game last weekend.
it was just popped up on the sides of it, and it was like, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. And they just seem to have a lot of depth and some of the young players coming through. And I do think some of these young players can shine for Andy Farrell. But going back to the Six Nations, yeah, just put his imprint on it. And if he starts to implement a style, because he said himself, oh, I'm not that far away. He doesn't think Ireland that far away of closing the gap between France and England. So it will be interesting to see how they go. I agree with Charlie. I don't think they'll win it, but they could really, really, you know, just show what they're about. It'd be interesting, really. I do think there might be dark horses, though, but I don't think they'll go all the way.
No. Another team is, you know, in the Six Nations, another team is Scotland. What's the key thing?
That is a fact, Joe Harvey. That is a fact, what you've said there. Another team in the Six Nations is Scotland.
Are they?
Yeah, brand new in it, you know, just since 1903 or something like that, I don't know. It's 150 years of the RFU, isn't it, this week? Probably should mention that.
150 years since the first Scotland-England game, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, they're wearing that old kit, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, less said about that. big thing for Scotland, they've got Finn Russell back. I think that's quite an exciting thing. Obviously, only got to play, I think, about an hour's worth of rugby, if that, international rugby, last season because of his falling out with Gregor Townsend. That wasn't a great way to start last year's tournament. What else we got here? Cam Redpath, looks like he might make his debut. I think he's 20 now, something like that, Chris?
Yeah, I think he's still a young lad, isn't he? I mean, we saw him 2 years ago, maybe at Bedford in the pouring rain, and he played again. I think they were playing Italy, weren't they, in the under-20s? And he had another brilliant game. I think he was given man of the match by Will Greenwood that day. And I think it is one that potentially got away from England. He's obviously had a little bit of time at Sale where he didn't think his career was going to go the way he wanted it to. And he said the other week that he owes Sale a lot for his development. He owes Steve Diamond a lot. But Bath has seemed to have given him a new lease of life. And there was always that debate of playing for Scotland at one age grade, playing for England at another. But now he looks like he's made his choice. And similar to what we talked about with Paolo Adogru at the start, I think everyone on this podcast hopes, you know, Paolo gets a chance to really showcase what he's about. I think Cam will get a really good chance to show what he's about. And I think, I don't know who said it, it was on BT Sport. It was a really good point. It might have been Hugo Monya. And he said, if Ali Price, Finn Russell and Cam Redpath can build a good relationship, that's exciting for Scotland. That is really, really. And you've got, you know, Darcy Graham in there, Blair Kinghorn. They've got some absolute electric players in there, Cam being one of them. And it'd be interesting to see if Gregor Townsend goes with them on Saturday. That would excite Scotland massively. And I think it just gives an extra needle, a little bit of an edge to the game as well. If Cam Redpath does start against England, then maybe he'll think, maybe Gregor will think it's a perfect scenario to chuck him in. This is Cam Redpath giving two fingers up to Eddie Jones, saying, look, you should have picked me. So it might work in Scotland's favour, but I think it's a brilliant, brilliant bit of work for Scotland to get him in the squad and get him captured in the Six Nations, and it's definitely exciting times.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just trying to think what else I've got written down here. Another man who put the two fingers up to Eddie, Gary Graham. He's likely to be playing eight because they kind of haven't really tied that one down with the World Cup a couple of years away. Duran van der Merwe, he's going to be probably quite exciting again. We're going to see a lot more of him next season because he's signed for Worcester Warriors. One thing for me, and this is something I want to ask you, Charlie, more than anything. A lot of the England-based players, they had to play for their teams at the weekend. What are your thoughts on that? Because you've seen the England lads, they're not getting released back to their clubs in between.
It's an interesting one because you don't want to go into the Six Nations tired, do you? You don't want to. But also, if you're in good form, you don't want to stop playing. There's nothing more frustrating, I think. I find it when I play the 20 stuff, you'd be playing well, you'd play your first two Six Nations games, you'd be in good form, and then you go back to the time as Leicester for me, and we'd have a game that weekend, and you get the blocks put on your play, and you're like, well, I do understand it, but can we not just look after my training a little bit in the week, maybe, to let me go out, because I'm in a good role, I don't want to break it up. So I think it'd be an individual basis on how the players feel. Some will want to play, some won't. I think it's different in the middle of the tournament, because I think actually sometimes it's less the physical side, more the mental rest of actually having a week off mentally from having to get prepared for a game. I think especially it's tough if you go and play for Scotland on a Saturday, and then let's use Cam Redpath, for example, you then have to get down to Bath on the Sunday. You have to go from all your Scottish calls, all your Scottish players, everything in Scotland, back into Bath for a week. You have to do all that and then flip back. That's really hard mentally. So I think the mental side of things would be why I think once I was in a tournament at the top level like that, I'd want to stay in that. I'm going to use the word bubble, not a COVID bubble, but as in a bubble of I'm playing for Scotland now. Obviously, the England players do. Scottish players are a bit tougher for, but that I guess they know that when they sign in England, and that's why a lot of them play in Scotland.
Yeah, no, definitely will be. I think another thing is the hooker battle, because David Cherry and Ewan Ashman are likely to be involved with the squad because of Stuart McInally's injury, which apparently he did some dodgy lift in the gym, so he's hurt his neck, so he can't actually play for a couple of weeks. So they'll be behind George Turner and or Grant Stewart as they look for selection. What else we got down here? But it's been a pretty poor year for form for the Scottish teams as a whole in the Pro 14. Glasgow are fourth in Conference A and Edinburgh fifth in Conference B. I wrote two different definitions for the pools. What else have we got? Oh, shall we move on to everyone's favourite topic? Wales. They're the most pressed team in the Six Nations. What have we got? How disappointed will they be after last season's showing? They won 3 out of 10 international fixtures last year. They've not selected Reece Webb. Kent Owens is back. What else have we got in here? Dan Lydiate has been called up for the first time since 2018.
I'm not going to lie. Didn't know he was still playing. I love Dan Lydiate, but I thought he'd retired. I genuinely thought he'd retired. That is genuine news to me. That's how much attention I've been paying recently.
Yeah, just been trucking away for the Ospreys, I understand. Mm. I think a few injury issues, and I think that's the key thing. I think they want to make sure at the age of 33 that he's been a couple of years injury-free before recalling him back. But obviously, he was Six Nations player of the tournament in 2012, I think, when Wales won it. I think that was around the right time. Is there North 2013? Knowledge.
That's impressive.
Watching A-League Irish.
Yeah, no, because you can watch all your A-League Irish you want. I want facts like that. That's what I want brought out.
I need to up my game.
No, just go on Sky Sports and just read it. That's fine.
On Wales, it's interesting because, like you say, obviously, they've come out of the Gatland era, and it hasn't gone how Pivac would have wanted, has it? So I think the question you got to ask is, let's say they have a terrible Six Nations. Let's say they lose to everyone but Italy, because they're probably going to beat Italy. But let's say they might even lose to Italy. But let's say they have a bad Six Nations, and they go from 3-10 to maybe 4-15. What do you do if you're the Welsh RF, if you're WRU? Because you're now 2 years out from a World Cup, 2 and a bit years. Do you stick with him and risk another third bad year and you've got 3 awful years in a row up to a Six Nations? Or do you make that tough decision? Now, if it was football, I know what would happen. But in rugby, they stick with Coach Flung. But if you do 2 bad international seasons on the bounce, can you take that risk going into a World Cup after you've had so much success for so long under Gatland? can you take that risk, or do you have to go, look, this isn't working? I think it's really interesting because I think I don't know what they do, because like I say, if it was football, I'd know in a heartbeat. You see it all the time. We don't seem to do it in rugby, but with such big stakes, would WRU give him another shot, or would they cut the losses and find someone else?
Well, I was thinking about something similar to this the other day, and I don't know about anyone else, but I feel like because of the nature of 2019 to 2020, you know, there's a very short break between the end of the World Cup and the start of the Six Nations. So you're already kind of on the back foot there, bringing in a new coaching staff. But then what COVID's done, it's taken out all those summer internationals where you're probably going to get five, maybe six games if you're Wales, because they always have that one outside of the international window. But then you obviously missed out on your autumn internationals as well. Yes, they probably played roughly the same amount of games, but because of COVID, you might not necessarily have got to see everyone, all the factors of the way the game was played, that you get to see so many Welsh players, you know, kind of week after week in the Premiership and then in the Pro 14. It kind of creates more questions than it answers, because you're thinking, well, he could be, you know, getting up pretty well, you know, he could be conditioned quite well by 2023. And the windows have just been all really pushed together, which means that it's become so intense and just so kind of, everyone's looking at it again, because there's no one, you know, we all know there's no one in the grounds really watching it. So you were all kind of watching it on the telly. And it's just added to all this pressure. And this is going to be felt in the WRU boardroom, because they're the same as us. They're kind of become fans now. They're not as involved with the game as they probably would have liked. So for Pivac, he's just kind of come in a rubbish time, like just one of the most awful times in history to ever, you know, take up a new job ever, probably. And yeah, you're taking over from Warren Gatland, and it was always going to be terrible. But this window has been so compressed and it's become so intense that it kind of feels like all it can be is failure. And he's bringing in a whole new identity to this Wales team. Whereas Andy Farrell, he's really just carrying on from what Joe Schmidt did and just changing the gameplay slightly.
I think it's me sitting on the fence a little bit, but what will make the decision if Charlie's right, if it does go for him, whatever you said there, Joe, 3-10 to 4-15 wins from these test matches, and there isn't any kind of clear signs of, well, he's trying something, he's developing a style of play, that's when I think the WRU have to go, well, yes, it's been tough, and what you said there, Joe, is absolutely spot on. Coming into a new job as a coach now, over the last 12 months, has been really, really tough. But the WRU have got to say, well, are we actually seeing any improvements? You know, he's left a couple of names out. You mentioned Reece Webb there. I know James Beaufort as well has been someone who seemed to have shone in the Welsh press, and they seem to be really happy with how the way he's been playing. So he's left a couple of those guys out. He's made those big decisions. But if there's no identity, there's no progression on the pitch, are they just going to go, well, look, we're 2.5 years out from a World Cup. We got to the semi-finals last year or 2 years ago. We need to make a decision. But if there is signs of making progress, I think you just stick with him. I think you have to stick with him. I think we've seen that a number of times in sport, that if you give coach time to develop a philosophy and develop an energy and a style of play, then you will 9 times out of 10 get the rewards you want. And sport does take time. And Charlie's right, football's completely different. It'd be a knee-jerk decision. We saw in football Frank Lampard getting sacked, and he was actually building a way of Chelsea playing, but that's the way football is, and hopefully that doesn't happen for Pivac, and hopefully we do see from a Welsh perspective some positive steps forward during the Six Nations.
And it should be said, they are missing Rob Evans, Nicky Smith, Samson Lee, Ross Moriarty, James Davies, Ellis Jenkins, Gareth Anscombe, Reece Patchell, Scott Williams and Jonah Holmes through injury. But, you know, there is this positive. You can look at the players they're attracting back to Wales. For example, Will Rowlands, the Hammersmith Welshman, as we'll call him. You know, he's coming back to, well, he's never lived in Wales, but he's going to Wales now to play his rugby for, I think it was Dragons or something like that. And then Will Griffjohn, who plays for Sale, he's signing for Scarlets. And
great name, that, by the way.
Will Griffjohn.
Will Griff. I want to be in that naming meeting. I don't think you have a formal meeting to name your child. That conversation where the mum, I imagine, goes, "Let's call him Will," and the dad goes, "Yeah, but we'll give him a longer name to be formal." Mum says, "Oh, William." He says, "No, Will Griff."
It kind of sounds like something you'd say when you're having a sneeze as well.
Yeah, it's just excellent. And then I always enjoy people who have two, like you, Joe, two first names are both their names. I really enjoy that. Yeah. So the fact that he has John as his second name, the fact that his name is not Will Griffjohn, yeah. always baffles me. I'm going on about nonsense here, but I love it. I think it's one of my favourite names in the world, Will Griffjohn.
It's the key issue around Welsh rugby.
It is. Well, it's quite funny because one of my middle names is a surname.
Amazing. That's it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
My surname is Harvey. So, but I'm not going to go into that because of
different.
Trust the listeners. But the thing is, what we should say about Wales is they've still got bags of experience. Lee Halfpenny, 93 caps. Liam Williams, 66 caps. George North is going to hit 100 caps in this tournament at the age of 28.
How old is... Yeah, I was going to say.
Bonkers.
Completely insane. Jonathan Davies, 85 caps. And you've got to think that, in particular, Lee Halfpenny and Jonathan Davies, the injuries that they've had over the years that have kept them out for 9 months at a time, 12 months at a time, for them to... You know, be at that point. We've got Talupe Faletau, 81 caps. Dan Biggar, 87. Alan Wynne-Jones, 143 test matches before we incorporate his Lions test caps.
Just,
I know how much it hurts to do 80 minutes in the second round. I know how you feel. I don't know how he's done it 950 times at a level that I don't know how it feels. I've never played test match rugby, but he's a phenomenon. I think I have to say now, Joe, go through all that experience, like they've got so much experience, so many great players. They have to, for me, Louis Rees-Zammit has to play.
Yeah.
He has to play. Now, I thought Louis was just quick. And when I say just quick, he is next level quick of you get these once a generation sort of quick. I saw him in training over 40 metres, leave Johnny May behind by about 10. I've never seen it like it. But I didn't fathom how good a footballer and rugby player he is till I trained with him and played with him. He's not just quick. The kid's the real deal. I think they have to invest in him and he has to be in that back three because he is a game winner. It's not like you carry him as well because of his pace. He's properly the real deal. I just want to go on record saying that, like, I thought he was just a quick kid, really quick kid. And then I played with him and I trained with him. And actually, no, he's got a rugby brain. He's a good footballer. He's got good skills. He's the real deal, and Wales need to back him, I think.
Yeah, 4 caps, I think, coming into this tournament. And he's joining kind of a list of guys like Kieran Hardy, Johnny Williams, Nick Tompkins, Rhys Carey, and, you know, even Callum Sheedy, who've all got very small number of caps, but actually there's so much ahead of them. And I think that's probably the exciting thing for Wales going into this tournament, is that they're going to see these guys grow.
I think that's exactly the point that I was trying to make but didn't make before, about kind of this style that PVAX wants to implement, and he's got to give these guys a chance. Rees-Zammit, as Charlie said there, he's a game changer. You know, you give him the ball, something can happen in an instant, and that's maybe what Wales need. Maybe that's a little bit of a spark they need to kind of move away from the era of Gatland into the PVAX era and give Tompkins a chance, give more of a chance, give Rees-Zammit a chance. There is some exciting players in there. It's whether PVAX willing to give them a chance and unlock them and unlock the potential at test level. It's a fine balance because Wales will want to get results, but at the same time, their only way they might get results is with these young players performing to the best of their ability. So as you say, Joe, it's exciting for Wales fans. It's just whether they're going to get to see a lot of them during the Six Nations.
Yeah, and we'll finish off with Italy before we have I'll try and remember all the fixtures again. I tried to remember them yesterday and I just completely failed, to be honest. But Italy... Well, what is there to say about Italy? I think is the key thing. What is there to say?
I know what there is to say about Italy. I said a tune on it in, lads. I saw a stat.
Look at his face.
Yes, I'm so excited.
You are so happy.
Because what is there to say about Italy? I feel like we have the same conversation about Italy every year. Is this going to be the year where they build on those little performances, where they show what they can do? And, oh, look, they've lost by 50 points. We're back where we started. No one really understands why, because they're too good to lose by 50 points. They are too good to do that, but manage to every season. So I don't understand how. But they are missing Jake Pledri, which is a huge miss for them. And you only understand how much of a miss it is when I saw a stat, I retweeted it last week. I think I'm going to get this right. Since his debut, he has beaten twice as many defenders as anyone else in the Italy side. He's beaten 84 defenders, I believe the number was, and the next best is 42. Like, that's a ridiculous stat. And you don't realise how much they're relying on him for their front foot ball until you hear that. And how's that going to affect their attacking game? Like, they've got some other great back rowers like Seb Negri, who I know is a friend of TRU, who's going to a lot as well. It's great. And they've got the likes of Callum Brayley, Stephen Varney, young scrum halves who are English, Italian, who I know, who are really good professionals, really good players, who, if you give them front football, are dangerous. But you take someone who does that much for your side. I don't care what side it is. It could be, back in the day, New Zealand losing McCaw. It could be England losing Wilkinson further back. You lose someone who's that pivotal to you, that talismanic, it's going to have a huge knock-on effect, no matter who comes in and replaces them, no matter how good their replacement is. That's the sort of injury that really resonates across a whole side. I think you look across sports, I'm going to get Liverpool in, Chris. We always manage to one way in the podcast. You look at what losing Van Dijk did to Liverpool. Actually, the defence has been fine, but because it upsets the whole balance of the team, suddenly Liverpool can't score goals. So actually, you take a defender out, like, why has that happened? But it completely knocks your balance when you lose someone like that. I've played in teams where you lose someone who is your big player, who is your talismanic man or your leader or your captain, and just nothing feels the same. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage without JK, because I don't think I fully appreciated how pivotal he was for them till I saw that. It's mind-boggling that one man has beaten twice as many as anyone else. That's almost unfathomable sorts of numbers.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think one of the things we have to say is that, like so many of the teams at the minute, it seems like there's not a huge amount of experience across this Italy squad. There's only four players in the squad that have got more than 30 caps, which, you know, really, I mean, that's probably 3, maybe 4 years playing kind of non-stop international rugby. But for only 4 players in the entire squad to have that is not an ideal situation for Franco Smith. They're kind of putting a lot of hope onto the 20-year-old fly half Paolo Carbisi, who obviously played really well during the Autumn Nations Cup and at the latter end of the Six Nations. But you are still hoping to rely on a 20-year-old fly half who, let's be honest, all the tools aren't in his armoury yet. 4 uncapped players in the squad, not a huge amount of experience across that team. Chris, it feels really horrible to say it this early doors, and often you kind of want to have this renewed optimism going into Six Nations, but you kind of get the feeling that, unfortunately, it's going to be a wooden spoon again.
Yeah, Charlie was right what he said before. We can say how much they have shown positive signs in the previous Six Nations or the Autumn, but it's unfortunately the same old story. It's in an experience he talked about, Joe. It was interesting. Franco Smith said last week that those players have played more games for their franchises over the last year and a half than they have even been in Italy camps, and it made Italy appearance. And that's what he said, that maybe it's slightly different with 2021. They have had that international experience now, and maybe it's a fresh start for them in 2021. And he's tried to steer clear of getting the monkey off the back, as he said, about Italy need this win. It's been 6 Six Nations now, I think, since the last win. And he's tried to say, well, let's not talk about it. Let's take the pressure off and just can't focus on the short-term outcome rather than long-term. So it's kind of like taking games 20 minutes at a time, making sure we perform to the best of our levels. Because he referred to the Autumn Nations Cup game against Scotland, where I think they were ahead for about an hour. And he said the final 20 minutes got away from him. And it's kind of that 80-minute performance. But how many times have we been saying that? It's about the 80-minute performance for Italy. And they've got some great young players there. And Franco Smith does say it's a fresh start for the side, but it's going to be very, very difficult to see how their first win is going to come about, because I do think Scotland are in a good place, I think Ireland are in a good place, and obviously France and England we said there, and maybe they may fancy a Wales side that are just still trying to find their feet, but I think it's going to be another tough campaign and it might be another learning curve for Italy.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, and Italy are the team that are opening the Six Nations on Saturday afternoon at 2:15 GMT kickoff, in case anyone else is listening further afield than Greenwich Mean Time. I don't know. Does that make sense as a phrase? Was that all right? Are we happy with that one?
It's been said now.
It's been said. It's in the books. So that's Italy versus France. That's going to take place in Rome. And then after that, we have the Calcutta Cup clash between England and Scotland at Twickenham. 4:45 kickoff is that one. And then also on Sunday, we have Wales versus Ireland, which is a 3 p.m. kickoff. So we might as well kind of go with predictions for that first round. Chris, who are you backing to win in Italy, France?
France.
Charlie?
France.
Yeah, France. 3 for 3. England versus Scotland, Chris?
38-all draw. No, England.
Charlie?
England.
Yeah, England's. Well, this is a boring little bit of game of predictions already, isn't it?
Get this idea, I'll jump.
Yeah, probably will. We might as well finish it off, though, just in case. Wales versus Ireland, Chris.
Ireland.
Ooh.
Ireland.
Do you know what? I'll go against the grain, Wales. Sod it. You know, they're at home. The roof might be closed.
You just love content, keep, Jack.
The roof will be closed to keep that atmosphere of all those, hang on, zero people in.
Well, no, just in case, you know, the flame cannons just carry on going for a bit, something like that. Keep the heat in, you know. Oh, no. It's going to be, I mean, we hope everyone's staying safe and watching it from home and enjoying it in as best a way that you can without being able to go to the games. It's going to be a very different Six Nations this year as it was an Autumn Nations Cup at the tail end of last year. Many thanks to Charlie Beckett for joining us. You can catch his new podcast now, Brew with Beckett, which is on, I think, across all podcast platforms, is it, Charlie?
Yeah, it's on Apple, Spotify, and as I say, if you want to have a watch of me for some reason, it's also on YouTube. So yeah, catch it there. And yeah, no, thank you for having me on, gents. It's been real fun. I always enjoy coming on, just chatting up with you. So anytime, I'm more than happy to. Thank you very much.
No, we really appreciate it. Chris, there's plenty more to come on Talking Rugby Union this week, I believe.
Yeah, we've got a lot of England, Scotland build-up out there now as we record. Gary's done a bit of a fun piece with a number of Scotland fans that were at that famous Twickenham game 2 years ago. It's to be honest, it's a really interesting read to see that a number of the fans were heading to the pub at half-time but decided to stay. So that's really nice. He's with Scotland tomorrow or today, Gary. And we've got a column as well coming out with our new columnist, which will be revealed later in the week. Joe, you're with England, I know. Tomorrow with the squad announcement. So looking forward to that. See wherever Eddie goes with Paolo Adogwu in the 23. We all have fingers crossed for that as well. We might have some Wales and Ireland content as well Friday and across the weekend, plus all the Premiership as well, as best we can with the resource we can at the moment. And that's all to come on Talking Rugby Union over the next few days or so.
There's so much rugby, lads. There's so much rugby.
Might have to give the A-League a bit of a miss, I think.
The Irish A-League might have to go to the back burner this week.
Yeah, might have to give her a miss for the next month or so.
Oh, what a shame. They'll miss your viewing number, yes. Chris. You know, try and get out of single figures. But yeah, no, thank you very much for listening and potentially watching this Talking Rugby Union podcast. I've been Joe Harvey. I've been joined by Chris Hill and Charlie Beckett. Please do review this podcast on your podcast platform. That helps, apparently. I reviewed Charlie's the other day, trying to give him that little boost to try and boost him up there.
I won't lie, Joe. I say it because I hear other podcasts who are far more successful than me say it. I don't know how it helps, but I just say, if you like, give us a 5-star review and review. It really helps. I don't know what it does, but apparently it does. So give this one a 5-star review.
Yeah, there's a really unusual thing. I'll explain it off air because it's really boring and dull. But yeah, thank you very much for listening, and I'm sure you'll hear us next time.